For weeks ahead of the fifth annual meeting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in Beijing last Thursday, the rumors in the Western press were that Iran was about to have its status upgraded from observer to full member. The SCO has its roots in an April 1996 meeting of the presidents from five neighboring countries, China, Russia, Kazakhstan, the Kyrgyz Republic, and Tajikistan. Their mutual interests included economic cooperation, the control of terrorism, separatism, and extremism inside their borders, and action against the flow of drugs and arms across their borders. The presidents of these five countries continued to meet annually. In 1999, they signed an agreement in Bishkek, the capital of the Kyrgyz Republic, to set up a formal organization for the control of terrorism. In June 2001, just months before the September 11 attacks, they met again in Shanghai and formed the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. This time, a sixth country, Uzbekistan, was also present. The Shanghai Spirit, as it was called back then, was seen as a model of regional cooperation, a partnership, but not an alliance. Economically, the goal is to increase trade. Geopolitically, it is to achieve regional stability without political preconditions. The collapse of the Soviet Union had left a political vacuum in Central Asia. For the first time, the SCO addressed that vacuum without discounting Russia, as Turkey, Iran, and the United States had previously tried to do. Instead, it includes and ultimately limits Moscow's influence in the region. When Chinese Premier Wen Jiabao visited Russia in September 2004, he proposed building up Eurasia as a free trade zone with Russia, but his Russian counterpart rejected this idea. In those days, Russia was still reeling from the terrorist attack in Beslan that same month, as well as the Rose Revolution in Georgia the year before, copycat revolutions in Ukraine, Uzbekistan, and the Kyrgyz Republic were yet to come. So Russia's focus for the SCO was on combating terrorism, separatism, and fundamentalism, while China hoped to see the organization primarily as a stimulus to economic cooperation. In 2005, SCO members, whose governments represented nearly 50% of the world's population, demonstrated what Adam Wolf of the Power and Interest News Report calls a desire to be a serious force in international affairs. According to Wolf, this can be seen in the granting of observer status to India at Russia's request, Pakistan at China's insistence, and Iran to the delight of all members. End quote. The joint declaration issued at the end of the summit rejected attempts at, quote, monopolizing or dominating international affairs, and insisted on non-interference in the internal affairs of sovereign states. End quote. The members further urged the U.S.-led forces in Afghanistan to declare a timetable for withdrawal from Afghanistan and from the Uzbek and Kyrgyz bases in the region that were established to support the Afghan operations. EurasiaNet recognized that Uzbekistan's decision around the same time to evict U.S. military personnel from the Karshi-Khananabad Air Base, quote, effectively marks the start of the Russian-led counter-revolution in Central Asia, end quote. In April of this year, SCO Secretary General Zhang Dequang said, Iran and three other observer nations, Pakistan, India, and Mongolia, will soon be invited to join as full members, end quote. The presence of Iran's Ahmadinejad and rumors that Iran might become a member of the organization have generated the most press in the West. But the invitation to full membership, and indeed the granting of observer status in case anyone had missed it, was a direct challenge to U.S. and NATO dominance in the region. Take Mongolia, for instance. Back in November 2005, Bush became the first U.S. president to visit Mongolia. He met Mongolian President Nambaran Ankhbayar and thanked him for supporting the U.S.-led war in Iraq and for sending more than 100 troops. Pseudo-NGOs from the U.S., like the National Endowment for Democracy, had helped draft the country's constitution in 1992 and have since helped in voter education and other pro-democracy projects. Pakistan is a traditional U.S. ally and a crucial collaborator in the global war on terror. However, because of its central location, Pakistan hopes to play a key role in regional commerce by providing a trade corridor and access to the sea for the SCO countries. Pervez Musharraf and Hu Jintao met for the second time this year, the day after last week's SCO summit. The last time the two met, Pakistan expressed its interest in the construction of oil refineries, gas terminals, and oil and gas storage and transit facilities. The Chinese side welcomed the proposals and agreed to assist in the development of the oil and gas sector in Pakistan. They also agreed to enhance cooperation in the peaceful use of nuclear energy. Liu Jiaqiao, a senior official of the Chinese Foreign Ministry, said he hoped Pakistan's application for full membership in the SCO would be accepted soon. An editorial this May in the Times of India concluded that India's role in Central Asia has been feeble and that India lacks a clear Central Asia policy with strategic intent. For example, the India-Iran-Turkmenistan railway project was criticized because it has yet to bear fruit. More to the point, India is counting on every vote in the U.S. Congress to get its nuclear deal with Washington sanctioned. Indian Prime Minister Manmohan Singh couldn't afford to be seen rubbing shoulders with Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad at the SCO summit. So he stayed home and sent Minister for Petroleum and Natural Gas Murali Deora instead. India does have a military base in Tajikistan and is interested in the region's vast gas resources. But getting the nuclear deal through is a top priority for India. To this end, it has made drastic shifts in its foreign policy, taking a pro-U.S. line in the Iran nuclear controversy, for instance. It voted in favor of an International Atomic Energy Agency resolution to report Iran's nuclear program to the UN Security Council, defying fierce opposition from the left parties in India. India could have abstained if it did not want to be seen to be challenging the U.S. position. However, in a bid to signal to the U.S. that it was a reliable ally, it went a step further and voted against Iran. Still, India lobbied hard to get into the SCO and finally got observer status with Russian backing. India has now applied for full member status in the grouping, as has Iran. Both Russia and China have stated that they want the entire Iranian nuclear issue to be handed back to the IAEA to handle through negotiation. The U.S., however, has stated that after receiving the IAEA report, they will seek a Chapter 7 resolution which authorizes the use of force. Failing this, the U.S. has a fallback position which calls for the UN Security Council to invoke economic sanctions against Iran. Gennady Yestafayev, a former general in Russia's Foreign Intelligence Service, has written, quote, "The U.S.'s long-term goals in Iran are obvious, to engineer the downfall of the current regime, to establish control over Iran's oil and gas, and to use its territory as the shortest route for the transportation of hydrocarbons under U.S. control from the regions of Central Asia and the Caspian Sea, bypassing Russia and China. This is not to mention Iran's intrinsic military and strategic significance," end quote. Of Iran's nuclear program, Yevgeny Yuelikov, president of Karachov Institute, Russia's nuclear research center, told TIR-TASS, quote, "Launching experimental equipment of this type is something any university can do," end quote. Former Indian diplomat M.K. Bhadrakumar sees SCO membership for Iran as, quote, "a lifeline in political and economic terms, and as an opportunity to debunk U.S. propaganda about Iran being part of an axis of evil." The SCO added no new members to its list this year, but it has demonstrated through a kind of subtle and indirect diplomacy that we are unaccustomed to in the West just what could be standing in the wings. Trade is an important part of the SCO. Even without new members, the group does not lack for strong economies. China's raging growth is well known, But one of the most surprising items during the last year was a statement by Badru Karmar, who writes regularly for the South Asia Analysis Group, that the Russian economy is now in better shape than ever before. Russia is not only holding vast reserves of energy, but is also flush with oil revenue cash to invest, Badru Karmar wrote. The investment climate is improving. It is keen to repay debts ahead of schedule, and with high oil prices, things could get still better. Another surprise came at a time when U.S. Senator McCain had introduced a bill to kick Russia out of the G8. Jim O'Neill, the head of global economic research at Goldman Sachs Group in London, in an interview with the Moscow Times, noted growing pressure to enlarge the G7. If the G7 wants to be regarded as a credible entity, he said, it's living on borrowed time. At the financial level, it's quite ridiculous not to include China at a minimum, and there is a very good case to consider having Russia, India, and Brazil, too. End quote. Kazakhstan's real GDP grew 9.3% in 2003 and 9.4% in 2004, driven largely by the oil sector. But grain production has increased on the average by 27% per year during the period from 1998 to 2003, according to the World Bank. Tajikistan has achieved an average economic growth of 10% per year for the past 4 years and has reduced poverty from 83% of the population in 1999 to 64% in 2003. Even without new members, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization could be an economic powerhouse in waiting. That's it for this Monday. This edition of World Report has been archived on the World Report website at cjoy.net/worldreport, where you can get it either as a podcast or in raw MP3 format. There are also links to recommended further reading if you're interested. To comment or suggest a story, email earthling@cjoy.net or Box 767, Nelson, British Columbia, Canada, V1L5R4, Attention, World Report. I'm Jim Terrell at Kootenai Co-op Radio. Thanks for listening.